thank you for attending Where Will the Rural Surgeon Work? I'm very gratified to see so many people still here on Thursday morning. I think we have a very interesting panel for you. I'm Phil Carapresso from Keokuk, Iowa, and I'm one of the co-moderators for this session. Where Will the Rural Surgeon Work? This is our panel. I'll give a brief introduction and touch on some rural demographics. Well, Pat Molt will tell you about the baby boomer generation. Russ Juno will look at Generation X. Tyler Hughes, my dear friend, is not here. I will go over some of his slides briefly, and then Jim Anderson will give a summary. Disclosures, I have none. I would tell you that the only thing I want to disclose is that I'm old today, tired, frequently grumpy, but I really am sincerely happy to be here. Whenever I speak, I like to start with definitions so we have everything in common. So we'll look at the definitions of rural, we'll look at some legislation and trends, our facilities and organizations, and then some information about rural surgeons themselves. So let's start then with defining rural. This is fairly easy. okay, I know this talk. This is fairly easy. We define rural one of two ways, both by geography and by population. Population is less than 50,000 people. The U.S. government has 15 different definitions. You can have a community of 50,000 people like Niles, Illinois, next to Chicago. That is not rural, so you cannot abut an urban area. I like to joke about Iowa being rural because it has only 3 million people but 18 million hogs. The geography is somewhat more subjective and can be looked upon as countryside, bucolic, pastoral, agricultural. And, of course, those types of areas cover 97% of our land area in this country, but only about 20% of our population, or roughly 60 million people, live in rural areas. It's interesting, if you look at that rural population, that there is a serious decline in the numbers in rural America. One study showed that there's been, in between 2010 and 2016, an 800,000 loss in that population. In point of fact, if you look to the right, you'll see on that graph that the population has been declining since 1920. Today, there are some other issues that are going on that affect that. One has to do with births and deaths. There are fewer births and more deaths in rural America. And in general, the 800,000 is principally an outward migration of people going to urban areas. They're leaving rural agriculture. Now they're leaving rural manufacturing areas, and they're going to urban areas. So we've defined rural. Let's look at legislation and trends. I like the Hill-Burton Act. How many people are familiar with Hill-Burton hospitals in your areas? Yeah, sure. In north central Iowa, where I practiced for 22 years, every county had a Hill-Burton hospital. In 1946, the Congress passed the Hill-Burton Act, which resulted in 6,800 facilities in over 4,000 communities. Imagine if that was something that could be done today. It's just not happening. In 1983, the prospective payment system started. That resulted in DRGs and a bunch of hassle when I was a young surgeon. In 1997, the Medicare Rural Hospital Flexibility Program, which established critical access hospitals, came into being. And today, there are about 3,000 urban and 1,800 rural hospitals in the United States. And in the rural hospitals, 53% of those are critical access hospitals. If you look at policy changes, and I'm speaking to the converted here. You all know these. What's happening? What are the trends? Electronic health records, documentation that may not be appropriate to the care of the patient but are so essential and involve our time. And then groups coming together and forming ACOs, systems, networks, etc. These are all much different today than they were in the past. I put this up again for definition's sake, and if we start looking at facilities and organizations, we all know what a hospital is. We know what a critical access hospital is. How many people practice in critical access hospitals? So we have a good handle on that. Rural, urban, we've talked about that. Of course, we know the difference between acute care and rehabilitation. The two things that we have to be familiar with today are systems, which are two or more hospitals under the same management, and then a network, which will involve a system, a single management, and hospitals, doctors, and even insurers. That's the state of the world today. So then if you go further, then a look at organizations, you can see between 2005 and 2016, these are the closures in rural hospitals. This is significant. It's also not going to stop. One-third of rural hospitals are at risk for closing in the next decade, and that could be approximately 600-plus hospitals in 42 states. And of those hospitals that are at risk to close, there were where a lot of us are working. These are the critical access hospitals. What happens with these closures? Not only don't we have a place to work, there'll be 99,000 healthcare jobs lost and millions of patient encounters that have to be diverted to other areas. So now let's look at the rural surgeons themselves. We belong to the surgical profession, the surgical community at large, and this graph shows that there are about 51,000, almost 52,000 surgeons as a specialty in our country. If you look at the distribution of the surgeon at the map on the right, kind of busy, hard to see, but if you're in a dark-colored state, you got a lot of surgeons. If you're in a light-colored state, like Iowa, which is pink, the density of surgeons is less. This is done by a location quotient, a calculation I'm not familiar with. I don't think Missouri is white, and Joe Corrado is the only surgeon practicing, apparently, in Missouri. I don't think they filled the application up. So it's been calculated that 7 per 100,000 are necessary to provide adequate surgical coverage in our country. The current average is about 6 per 100,000. In our rural areas, the small rural areas, fewer than 10,000. 50,000 is and less is large, 10,000 less small, 2,500 less isolated or remote. There's only four in the small rural areas. In 2006, there were 30% of the counties in this country that did not have a surgeon, and interestingly enough, 50% of those counties had hospitals. So people say, well, of course, they didn't have a hospital. Why should they have a surgeon? There were at least enough of them that had hospitals. So let's look at the rural surgeons then. I find these numbers interesting. When I was a young man in 1981 and practicing, 40% of the surgeons were between 50 and 62. I was in the other category. I was in the 24%, which were younger than 40. If you jump forward to 2005, you can see that now 52% are 50 to 62. So that number has gone up, and we're down to only 13% younger than 40. In 2000, there were 18,000 general surgeons in the country. In 2020, it's predicted that there'll only be 16,000. Again, we looked at trends. We talked about this. Practices of 10 or fewer in 2014 had gone, in this one study, from 80% to 61%, and solo practices declined from 44% to 19%. Anybody here in solo practice? There you are, man. Me too. Last 8 years of my career, I spent in solo practice covering two hospitals. That's disappearing and going away. Contrary to this piece of information, practices of 100 and more by 2015 had grown to over 100 physicians in the practices. I think this is a telling piece of information. In 2017, Merritt Hawkins did a survey of medical students, and they found that only 3% of medical students would look at practicing in communities, regardless of specialty, of 25,000 or less. Here's my personal experience, folks. I started practice in Mason City, Iowa in 1976. I became a fellow in 1979. When I started my practice, I was in a community of 29,000, a large rural community. We had 8 surgeons. We had a service area of around 100,000, so we were about right on the money for our numbers. In 1998, I moved to Keokuk, Iowa, and far southeastern Iowa in the Mississippi, thinking I was going to retire. That took me 20 years. Keokuk is 9,900 people, a small rural community, and during that time I practiced also in Carthage, Illinois, and isolated. I was employed in both situations. Today I'm retired. Mason City now has 5 rural surgeons, or a deficient number, and Keokuk has no one living in the community and actually nobody coming in, nor does Carthage, Illinois. It's interesting if you look at then where will rural surgeons work? Where will rural surgeons be trained? There are 246 residencies in the country producing over 1,000 surgeons a year. Look at numbers and you can find studies that will go be as low as 30% or as high as 70% of graduating surgeons from their residencies go on and take fellowships, which limit the scope of their practice. It's estimated by another study that you need to have at least 2 surgeons in rural hospitals recruited by 2030 for those hospitals to survive, and we saw that one-third of the rural hospitals in this country are at risk of closing. So where will the rural surgeon work? That's what we're going to hear from our panel. Our solutions, then there has to be solutions, must identify the challenges of rural practice, recognize that there are challenges, see what the factors are associated with the choice of rural practice, initiate interventions to increase interest and preparation for rural practices, and then really look at successful rural practice models and try to learn and copy from them. The studies will depend, the success of our programs will depend on research and data, and you can see from some of the numbers that I showed you, it's not out there. We're not doing it. The studies are old, and the data may not be accurate. Overall, I would say in 2018, as we go forward, we need to develop systems of support for rural surgery, rural practice, and communicate. It's not a one-way street. So I thank you for your attention.